You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
New York Times Book Review editor Pamela Paul says she met Bob 28 years ago. He became her confidant, travel companion, and an important part of her life. But Bob isn't a person. It's a book. In it, Ms. Paul has written about every book that she's read since. Her new memoir, My Life with Bob, Flawed Heroine Keeps Book of Books, Plot Ensues, is a meditation on what it means to love reading and how certain books have shaped her life. It's published by Henry Holt, and I'm very pleased it has brought Pamela Paul back to our show. Welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me.
Where did the idea for Bob come from?
So I was a failed teenage diarist, essentially. Like all bookish, writerly girls, I scribbled away my woes and sort of half-baked thoughts into a diary. And I realized when I looked back on those entries that not only was the content sort of miserable, fights with my parents, unrequited crushes, but the writing wasn't even good. And reading them made me feel bad about myself. I realized these are all the things I actually want to forget about. Bob, which is just a list of the books I've read, that was what I wanted to remember.
Did you call it Bob from the start?
I did. It's the acronym for Book of Books. It was kind of unimaginative, but it enabled this book to kind of take on a sort of personhood.
Were you already reading good books at that point?
I've always read good and bad books. I am a omnivorous kind of reader. I don't discriminate too much.
And were they books that you found by yourself? I know I grew up in a house where there were a lot of Signet paperbacks. So my father had a canon that I then had to break free of at a certain point in my early teens. But for a long time, it was James T. Farrell and William Faulkner. I mean, not bad writers, but my father's writers.
Well, I grew up in a relatively book-deprived environment. My parents and my mother didn't really buy books. We lived very close to the library, so most of my books were procured from the library. And the first page of my book of books, which I replicate in My Life with Bob, it starts off very high. I read The Trial by Kafka. That's the first entry in my book of books. And then you get all my AP English books, so it looks very lofty. But on that same first page is also a memoir by the roadie from The Doors. So I don't hide anything from Bob. All the books go in there except for picture books.
How much do you write about the books in Bob?
You know, I didn't want this to be a list of books. A book about a list of books would be incredibly boring, I think, for readers. So it's really more about the space between the book and the reader. It's about the relationship that people have with what they read, and specifically the way in which certain books reflected, influenced, drove my ideas, sort of shaped my life. So I tell it through a series of stories.
Have your tastes remained fairly consistent?
The
trial is not a bad way to start.
No. My tastes are consistent in their inconsistency. I tend to read more nonfiction than fiction. For most of my life, I have been drawn more toward 19th century literature and early 20th century. My interest drops with the mid-century writers that are so popular among a certain generation. You know, I never got into Updike and those sort of mid-century male monolithic authors. Until I started working at The Times, I tended not to read a lot of contemporary fiction, but I've gotten better.
Do people say to you, you should read this book? What does that phrase mean to you?
Oh, God. I have a whole chapter on book recommendations. Because I think they're incredibly fraught. I think that, you know, they often contain some kind of message. Like, you give your, you know, boyfriend or your partner a book, and you're like, I think you should read this. There's always some kind of message in there that you think someone should know something that you don't want to tell them yourself or you can't tell them yourself. So I always think that I think in general, book recommendations often have more to do with the person recommending than they do with the recipient.
That's not been my case. I often recommend books that I just think are wonderful and that I wish other people would have read. Books that, like The Macioka Sisters or Memoirs and Confessions of a Justified Sinner or anything by Machado de Assis. And then I realized later that that just went in one ear and out the other.
But it was so nicely intended, at least. I often recommend books with enthusiasm. And in that chapter, I write about how my older brother, Roger, would recommend books to me, and they were always really great recommendations, but he would give them to me with this air of urgency that I felt like, you know, he gave me Confederacy of Dunces, for example, and basically was like, I don't want to talk to you until you're done. That's how much he wanted me to share his enthusiasm.
Do you also keep journals?
I don't. No, no. This is the one consistent journal that I've kept throughout my life, and it's still the same book. It's incredibly worn out. I spilled coffee on Bob about 15 years ago, so I fear there's some kind of rotting substance that he's sort of disintegrating a little bit. But
you still have a lot of empty pages?
I do. I write very small. I used to live in fear that I would, you know, fill up the book and have to move on to a new volume. And I've grown very attached to this particular book. Now I worry that I'm going to die before it ends. And I sort of, I think that, you know, I could see myself putting in the last entry and then just dropping dead, you know.
Do you think that someone could extract the same meaning you take from Bob from a list of the music that you were listening to at different times in your life?
Perhaps, but I think that I tried to keep a list of movies at a certain point because I'm a big fan of film. And but I think what's special to me about books, different from other forms of storytelling, is that it's such an interactive experience. When you are reading a book, you are creating that world in your head in collaboration with the author. And I think that's why so many people come away from the same book with a very different conception of what that book is about. It's why you often read wildly varied reviews of the same book. And there are many occasions in which someone will come up to an author, a novelist, and say, you know, I loved your book. I love that it was about redemption. And the author will say to himself, I didn't write a book about redemption. But if the reader read it that way, then it is about redemption.
Do you tend to start reading a lot of books by the same author if you've enjoyed one?
I do, but I also, you know, I'm a little bit of a roving reader in that there's so much that I want to read that I find myself kind of compelled to keep reaching out into new territory. There are some writers that I do go back to, and I'm pretty much a George Eliot completist with the exception of Romola, which I feel like is the exception that everyone makes. But there are authors that I intend to read everything, but I haven't quite yet.
My guest is Pamela Paul, whose latest book is My Life with Bob, Flawed Heroine Keeps Book of Books, Plot Ensues. So when did you decide to reveal this about yourself?
I decided to reveal it when I launched a column in the New York Times Book Review back in 2012 that still runs, called By the Book. And it's a profile of a person through the books that he or she reads. So we include authors and sometimes, you know, other public figures, musicians, artists. And the idea was that you could tell the story of a person's life through their reading. And I kind of wanted to prove the point. And so in that same issue, on the back page, I wrote an essay about Bob. And I did it with some trepidation, but I was so excited about this By the Book. The first one was David Sedaris. And I so wanted people to, like, to get it, to understand what I was trying to do, that I allowed the first page of Bob to be scanned in. It's also in My Life with Bob. And I wrote about it. And, you know, it really felt like spilling out my teenage diary. It's kind of embarrassing. The essay got such an enormous response from people. And the responses tended to boil down to sort of two different types. There were the people who said, oh my God, I do that too. And I didn't know that anyone else did. And I love those people. That's my tribe. And then there were the people who were like, oh, I wish I'd done that. And now it's too late. But I don't think it's ever too late. I think you can always start.
But in your case, you are also reading books for professional reasons as a book editor. So some of these books may not have been your choice. They just were assignments. Do they feel any different than the other books, the books that you went to because you were really just wanted to read them?
Yes, absolutely. I try not to read for work. I've tried to spend my entire career, even though it is all around books, I've tried desperately to avoid having to read something that I don't necessarily want to read. Because for me, reading a book is a gut-level decision. It's about an emotional, an intellectual, like almost a spiritual need that I feel in that moment. so much so that I don't decide what I'm going to read until the very second I finish the book that I've got, and I choose then among from a short list that I've sort of stacked up, like, what is it that I need to read right now?
Does it matter whether it's in paperback or hardcover or electronic Kindle?
For me, it's always in print, and it's mostly, well, it's for a number of reasons. I don't like to look at a screen because I look at a screen all day long for work, and after the day is over for work. Screens, you know, permeate our lives, and for me, books are about pleasure. So it's taking my eyes away from the screen, and I'm also just a greedy book fanatic. You know, I will have sometimes three different editions of the same book because I like the UK cover better than the American one, or I need to have the Library of America version, or I need one with this introduction. I like the smell of the glue. I like the texture of the pages. I get into the typeface. It's the entire package.
So you talk about some of these books having a real impact on your life. Brave New World when you were in high school?
Yeah, Brave New World I read when I went through this dystopian phase. I remember I watched the movie A Clockwork Orange at way too young an age. It was really like a very poor decision on the part of my father to let me see it, but it got me hooked into the idea of dystopian fiction. So I went through this dark period my senior year of high school where I read Orwell and I read Huxley, and I became kind of obsessed with those books and wrote my senior thesis on dystopian fiction.
And now Handmaiden's Tale is having that same kind of impact.
Yes. Yeah, I know. I feel like I was there just, you know, a long time ago.
How did Thalia Zapatos's A Journey of One's Own stop you from pursuing a job at Quaker Oats during your senior year of college?
So that is probably the book that had the most direct impact on my life. I went to college thinking I would go into publishing or advertising. My mother was an advertising copywriter. I thought that seemed like fun. And
I was one. It's not fun.
It's not. Well, I'm glad that I didn't become one. So I went into college thinking that's what I would do, and I left college in the end. I went through some other possibles, but I ended up thinking I would leave college and do that. And I was in a job interview on campus with Quaker Oats, and I had this kind of out-of-body experience where I looked at myself and this is what I saw. I saw a woman in like a J. Crew suit saying, I would like to work at Quaker Oats because I really love Captain Crunch, but I only like it when it has crunch berries in it. And I suddenly thought, is this what I've gone to college for? Is this why I read all those books, did all that studying? And I stopped. Actually, the recruiter said to me, like many of us like Captain Crunch here at Quaker Oats, but really, why do you want to work here? And I realized I didn't want to work at Quaker Oats. And I walked out of the interview, and I had been reading on the sly this book by Thalia Zapatos, A Journey of One's Own, Uncommon Thoughts for the Independent Woman Traveler, which was about traveling as a woman alone. And Zapatos had done these incredible things. There were photographs in the book of her, you know, on a camelback and going, you know, she's like swam down the Ganges. She did all these adventurous things. And as I read it, I thought, like, I would never do any of those things. But maybe I should, just simply because I would never do them. And so this idea began to percolate in my mind that perhaps I hadn't considered all my options. If I was leaving college wanting to do the same thing that I had wanted to do when I got there, maybe I hadn't been exposed to enough. And so I ended up canceling all the interviews on my recruiting calendar, and I bought a one-way ticket to Northern Thailand, and I moved there.
So that book has a lot more power for you than it probably had for a lot of other readers.
Yes, a lot of other people were probably very content to read about, you know, her travels and leave it there. But, you know, she had a paragraph in that book in which she said, you know, people wait until they have, you know, until their mortgage is paid off or until their kids are grown up or their dog dies or whatever it might be. And I thought, I don't have anything. I've got no obligations. I should go now.
You mentioned an out-of-body experience. Still narrate your life in third person?
No, I gave up on that habit. I think that, you know, again, like a lot of people, or maybe just really dorky girls, or people who grew up reading lots of biographies like I did of, you know, Abigail Adams and Clara Barton, I kind of thought of myself as the heroine of my own life. Now, I wasn't necessarily a great heroine. I was aware of that, but I nonetheless kind of proceeded through my days like they were chapters in a narrative and would find myself talking through it and writing it in my head and even sometimes saying it aloud. And I will tell you this, that's an incredibly annoying thing to do. And my best friend, sort of yelled at me one day, and I pretty much stopped after that.
What about having kids? Do you, because you say your parents weren't readers, but you are. How do you pass along that love of reading to your children?
So my parents actually were readers. They were readers. They just weren't. My mother was not an owner of books. My father became a big collector of books, especially later in life. But for my kids, they're incredibly spoiled, obviously, having someone who works at the New York Times Book Review, because I get a lot of books for free. And I started off at the Times as the children's books editor. When I got promoted, they considered it a demotion that I no longer, you know, had sort of the first access to all of the new picture books and middle grade and YA. So they have an enormous amount of books, and I envy, especially my older two, who are speed readers, and I'm a very slow reader, which is my great failure, I think, in life.
I have one more question for you, because we're pretty much out of time, but why does the Times sometimes review a book more than once?
Well, we have two ways of reviewing books at the Times. We have our daily critics, Michiko Kakutani, Dwight Garner, and Jennifer Senior. And the way they work is it starts with the critic, and the critic picks the books that he or she determines she would like to review, that she wants to weigh in on, and that's how they do it. At the Sunday Book Review, we start with the book. And so the editors at the Book Review will determine what it is that we think should be reviewed, and then we decide who should review it. And we try not to duplicate too much, but when we do, we try to get a very different take. So.
And that leads to some strange things. A friend of mine got a rave review in the daily paper and a mixed review in the Sunday Book Review and was very confused about that. Same book.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it brings us back to the fact that everyone reads stories in a different way. And that's why, you know, everyone reads books in a different way. Everyone reads different books. For me, my trajectory of books, the order in which I've read all these books, I can't imagine that there's a single person on this earth that has read the same books in the same order and had the same reactions to them.
Pamela Paul is the editor of the New York Times Book Review and oversees book coverage at the Times. She will be speaking with Frank Bruni on June 8th at 7 p.m. at the Barnes & Noble store on 82nd Street and Broadway. Her book, the latest one from her, is My Life with Bob, Flawed Heroine Keeps Book of Books, Plot Ensues. It is published by Henry Holt. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Oh, it was a total pleasure.